This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Start of Me and You, written by Emery Lord, performed by Angela Gothels.
Chapter 1. Of all the places to have something memorable happen to you, Oakhurst, Indiana had to be one of the worst. Our town was too big for people to know everything about you, but just small enough for them to clench down on one defining moment, like teeth clamped on prey. Won the spelling bee in fourth grade? You are dictionary girl forever. Laughed a little too hard in sixth grade? You will still be the guy who peed his pants as you walk across the stage to receive your diploma. And I was the girl whose boyfriend drowned. The day before our junior year began, Tessa sat across from me in our booth at Alcott's Books and Beans, reading, while we hid from the August heat. I sucked down the last of my iced coffee and leaned back. I'm gonna look around before we have to go, I said. Okay. She didn't glance up. Her skin had soaked up the summer sun so that she glowed from the inside out, tan skin disguising the only feature we shared, our freckles. Mine were more pronounced than ever, scatters of pinpoints against my still pale skin. I glanced back over each shoulder as I scanned the shelves for TV Writers Boot Camp. No one but my grandmother knew I'd been slowly but surely writing a script for my favorite show, The Mission District, about a plucky father-daughter duo running a diner in San Francisco. The script occupied the small, secret spaces of my days, though I'd never planned to do anything with it. At least I hadn't until I discovered a summer screenwriting program at New York University. There were 100 reasons I shouldn't apply. Too expensive. Too improbable that I'd get in. And too impossible that my mom would agree to it before next summer. Still, I kept editing the script, almost compulsively. Moments before flagging down an employee to help me find the book, I noticed a woman beelining toward me. I recognized her, the mom of someone in my grade, though I couldn't remember whom. By the time she made eye contact with me, it was too late to run off. And to make matters worse, I could sense someone on my other side surveying the poetry and plays section. Someone who would witness every awkward moment heading my way. Hello, Paige, how are you? Adjusting the sensible purse on her shoulder, she gave me that look, full of pity. You'd think, given the diversity of the human population, that we would have come up with multiple facial expressions for sympathy. But no, there's one. Eyebrows and mouth downturned, head tilted like a curious bird. That's all it took. Aaron's grinning face flashed in my mind, an expression that meant he was up to something. The ache of his absence throbbed in the center of my chest, as real as any physical pain I'd ever felt. Just as quickly, the guilt entered my bloodstream like a toxin. There I was, clinging to the scraps of happiness that I could finally feel again. Coffee and books and an afternoon with my best friend. What right did I have when he was gone? Fine, thank you, I said. I'd seen that look on hundreds of faces in the year since Aaron died. People had no idea what it did to me, how it brought back feelings and sharp pangs. The woman forged on with that grim but caring smile. I heard the school built a garden to commemorate Aaron. That's so nice. I read an article in the paper that... She kept talking, but her voice fuzzed over as I fought off memories of the garden dedication ceremony. The smell of mulch and springtime. The whole sophomore class was herded outside for it last April. Tessa, Kaylee, and Morgan stood tightly around me, like they could physically shield me from all the stares. Aaron's parents and brother shook hands with school board members and dabbed at tears. The principal said a few words. He'd asked me to speak as well, but I said it should be Clark Driscoll, Aaron's best friend. A fitting tribute, I think, the woman concluded, finally. Yes, I said. Very fitting. Well, tell your mom I said hello. Will do. This fib seemed more polite than asking her name. I forced a smile as she walked away. As always, I felt like a fraud, accepting condolences from strangers. Aaron Rosenthal and I met after my 15th birthday, and we went out for 2 months. Compared to his parents and friends, I barely knew him. I knew the good things. How he did goofy stuff just to make me laugh. How he used to lace our fingers together as we walked, squeezing my hand when he was excited about something, and he was always excited about something. No tough guy smokescreen like other guys in our grade. Of course, he probably got grumpy sometimes. I just didn't know him long enough or well enough to see it. I mourned for his life, but I also mourned selfishly for myself. The first boy to really notice me drowned in a freak accident, and I would never know the whole of him. The idea of us still hung in the air, but we'd never be more than a few golden memories in a bundle of what-ifs. How do you find closure in that? Especially when strangers treat you like a widow to a devoted husband. In post-mourning purgatory, I was stuck. Like the hardened gum under our booth's table. And that's when I glanced to my left. The person standing there, the guy who'd heard that whole exchange, was Ryan Chase. My ultimate since middle school pipe dream of a crush. I hadn't seen him in months, and he'd since become a special brand of hot over the summer. Tan skin. Light brown hair lightened further by the sun. Standing this close, I realized we'd probably be the same height if I was wearing heels, but he didn't need to be tall. Not with that blue-eyed, broad-shouldered thing happening. I jerked my head away, mortified. I told myself he hadn't heard that woman talking, but he stepped closer to me and said quietly, "Hey, you all right?" I didn't think Ryan Chase even knew who I was, but of course he did. Paige Hancock, the girl whose boyfriend drowned. "Yeah." Heat pulsed in my cheeks like a heartbeat. If I turned all the way toward him, he'd think I had sunburn the color of raw chicken. "Fine, thanks." "It sucks," he said. "The sympathy, I mean. Because it's mostly for them, so they can pat themselves on the back for being caring." "Yes." I turned to him, accidentally baring my fluorescent face. "That's it, exactly." He nodded. It was such a serious topic, but he smiled as pleasantly as if we were talking about cupcakes. "My sister had cancer a few years back. She's okay now, but we became pros at talking to total strangers about it." I knew this, of course. He was the boy whose sister had cancer, until he started going out with Leanne Woods freshman year. Then he was Ryan Chase, the boy everyone wanted to date. But my crush on him started way before that, when his sister was sick, in fact. It started in the cereal aisle where he did the sweetest thing I'd ever seen a boy my age do. A comment popped into my mind. I wasn't even sure if it made sense, but I'd been silent for too long already. So I deadpanned. "I guess I'm minor league in terms of pity acceptance, but I'm hoping to go pro this year. Hey, maybe that lady was a scout." Ryan Chase laughed. I mentally thanked my dad for all his years of complaining that Indiana doesn't have a major league baseball team.
"So,
Ryan said.
You picking up books for school tomorrow?
Yep, I said, suddenly glad that I hadn't found the screenwriting book.
Me too. There was a lot of summer reading for Honors English, and I just realized there was one I didn't get to. Guess I'm cramming already.
Do you have fourth period honors?
Yeah, you too.
I nodded, now denying the urge to dance in little circles. I share a class with Ryan Chase, who laughed at something I said. Never mind that he has a girlfriend of 2 years.
Cool. Well, I should buy this and get started.
He held up the play in his hands. Yeah, I should get back to my friend. This was code for I have friends, I swear. So I guess I'll see you in class tomorrow.
Yeah,
he said, flashing the heartbreaker grin.
See you tomorrow. We'll make it a good year.
My heart tried to skip right after him. And then just like that, it came crashing down. The guilt, as always, started low, rumbling in my feet and stomach. It rose like lava, hot across my chest until I felt sweaty. After a random woman reminded me how painfully gone Aaron was, I turned around and swooned over Ryan Chase. No, I commanded myself, you have to stop this. I'd done it for months now. The dizzying dance between grief and normalcy and the guilt I felt in moving between the two. I talked about that a lot during my year of therapy, though nothing the therapist said seemed at the time to help. But I'd finished my last ever session a week before and realized, I'm on my own now. I'd have to cope in the moment, not wait until my appointments. The therapist had encouraged me to address my feelings head on, and the truth was sometimes pretending to be brave eventually made me feel brave. So I lengthened my spine, shoulders back. I summoned the flecks of courage in me, little zaps from somewhere in my bloodstream, not many, but enough. Enough to stand up tall as I strode back to the corner booth.
We'll make it a good year.
Yes, Ryan Chase, we will. But how? Is that something I could plan out? I mean, I planned my lunches and my outfits and even made study plans for tests, complete with extensive notes from class. Why not plan a great year? Last year, that seemed impossible. Mapping a plan in the shadowlands of loss. Now, though, maybe I could fake my way through every step until things were truly good again. I could draw a path back to happiness, step by step. I plopped into our booth, determination coursing in me like caffeine.
Everything okay?
Tessa asked, looking up. Yes, I said, reaching into my bag. Well, it will be. The whole stranger talking to me about Aaron thing happened. She snorted angrily. She'd stood beside me during so many uncomfortable interactions, near piles of apples at the farmer's market, while buying sodas at the gas station, in the allergy medicine section of the drugstore. It's fine, I said, because I've realized I just need a plan. I thumped my planner onto the table as aggressive as I'd ever been with it. When Tessa bought me the planner a few Christmases back, I knew she was kind of teasing me about what she called type A tendencies, but I didn't care. It was love at first sight. Lavender leather with my initials embossed in the corner and pages of clean white paper segmented into weeks and months. Ever since I'd unwrapped a refill calendar for each new year, my favorite holiday tradition became sliding the fresh pages into the soft purple binding.
A plan for what?
Tessa asked.
Avoiding the pity brigade? I guess we could wear masks, masquerade ones, with feathers.
I almost smiled, thinking of us in peacock plumes and gold sequins. No, a plan to have a better year, proactive things.
Oh.
Her magazine dropped to the table.
Great, like what?
The notes section in the back of my planner already had lists on it. But there, after my packing list from our summer family vacation and lines of school supplies I'd purchased and checked off, I found a new page. Well, technically I've only thought of one thing so far, I said, and I wrote it in neatly at the top. 1. Parties/social events. I'm going to Maggie Brennan's party next weekend. Tessa pursed her lips, not quite a frown.
Are you sure you want to start so big? We could reintroduce you to high school society somewhere less overwhelming.
I'm sure. Every year the class president throws a back-to-school party and invites everyone in our grade. I'd missed last year's, of course, since it was only 2 weeks after Aaron died. That period blurred like one dark shadow in my mind. The numb days holed up in my room and the jarring return to school. Morgan insisted on painting my nails every weekend while we marathoned TV shows. It seemed so silly, so pointless. Until I looked down at my mint green or petal pink nails in class, one beautiful glossy thing in my life. My friends added the first colors to my black and white world. Tessa nudged my arm.
I've got one. You could rejoin one of the groups you did freshman year, chorus or French club or something.
Perfect, yes. I couldn't handle my extracurricular activities last year between the therapy appointments and everything else. Although, that's ironic coming from you.
I'm involved.
I go to yoga and the Carmichael. Tessa was the only person in the history of the world with a fake ID and no interest in drinking. She had to be 21 to get into the Carmichael to see all the best indie bands perform. I think the staff knew she was in high school, but they also knew how serious she was about music. She rarely invited me or anyone else. Those shows weren't social events for Tessa. They were personal, between her and the band on stage. Exercise and concerts are not co-curriculars.
They are if you want to work for a record label and teach yoga on the side, she said. You know, what you're doing is kind of a yoga thing. Well, technically I think it's a Buddhist thing, but I learned it from a yogi. Beginner's mind.
I made a face like she'd suggested a juice cleanse, which she had for all I knew. Yoga wasn't for me. I'd tried a few sessions when she first discovered it, until my king pigeon pose turned into pretzel who fell over onto a nice older lady.
What does that mean?
It means trying to approach new experiences with no pre-existing judgments. You always go in as a beginner, even if you're not. That way, you're open to anything that happens.
Yes, I said, exactly.
Join a group at school and go to a big party seemed manageable enough. But two items made for a pretty anemic plan, I would need more.
I should probably get home, I said, glancing at my phone. My dad's picking us up at 6.
My parents didn't compromise at all while they were married, but they somehow managed to be flexible with custody, arranged around our variable schedules. This week, Wednesday and Sunday were highlighted yellow in my planner, indicating dinner with my dad. Tessa gathered her things.
What's he making?
Spinach and feta lasagna, I think. Since the divorce, my dad had developed a flair for creative cuisine, with his successes equaled by mighty failures. This delighted Tessa, never knowing what would be served or how. It was less funny to me, since those were my odds for 2 out of 7 dinners a week.
Cameron won't like that, Tessa said.
There was nothing I knew about my own sister that Tessa didn't also know. My younger sister was infamous for her aversions to green vegetables, dairy, and acting like a rational human being. Tell me about it. You could come over if you want. Wish I could, but my parents are coming home, Tessa said, sliding her sunglasses on as we walked to her car. Her blonde hair absorbed the sunlight into its white gold waves. For 3 whole days. Tess's parents, Nora and Roger McMahon, owned an international chain of boutique hotels called Maison. They moved to Oakhurst when Tessa was in elementary school, but they frequently traveled for business. Tessa had what I considered my dream life. Limited parental supervision, fabulous vacations, and a massive house. Her grandmother lived with her, but now that Tessa was old enough to drive, Gran McMahon spent more than a few long weekends at Maison Boca Raton with her man friend. Even when she was home, Tessa's grandmother was always flitting off to the country club, meeting friends for bridge or attending fundraisers. We climbed into the car, Tessa's, as always, since I didn't have my own. I'd gotten my license earlier in the summer, on the exact day of my 16th birthday. Unfortunately for me, my mom's car broke down a mere week before my driver's test. $8,000 later, my hope of inheriting her car sat in the junkyard next to a blown piston, whatever that was. After all that, 6 months of driving practice split between my mom splaying her hands in a panicky stop motion and my dad whistling while he watched out the window, no car or freedom for me. I know it's the last day of summer nostalgia talking, Tessa said, opening the windows. But it's kind of beautiful here every once in a while. Framed by the open car window, the tree-lined streets became a blur of deep greens and broad branches. These wide oaks announced every changing season, sprawling from the Welcome to Oakhurst sign to the oldest section of town. Along the main drag, new restaurants and shops popped up every few months, but the trees made the town feel charming and contained. When I was younger, Oakhurst seemed like a nice enough place to live. I didn't remember much about Seattle, where Cameron and I were born, and nothing could have been worse than muggy Georgia, where we lived in a podunk town for my first grade year. But when Aaron died, Oakhurst closed in around me, shrinking to the size of a snow globe. I was encased inside this tiny world where pity flurried around me instead of snow. Tell your dad hi for me, Tessa said as she pulled into the driveway. Pick you up at 7 tomorrow morning? Great, I tried to sound casual. But the first day of school, nerves sparked inside me as I made my way to the door. Dinner ran long, and my mind kept wandering toward my plan. My younger sister prattled to my dad about drama in her dance class, while I searched for other ways I could make a better year for myself. I needed to brainstorm with someone I trusted, someone who would know what to do, and fortunately, I had the perfect person. At home, I said hello to my mom inside and hurried upstairs to call Grammy. My mom preferred that I only speak to my grandmother in person, since talking on the phone occasionally confused her. She lived only a few miles away in an assisted living facility, but it was too late to go over there and I needed to talk now, so I shut my door firmly behind me. My grandmother's memory started to stall about 10 months ago, and it quickly worsened to almost no short-term memory. It was sad to watch, incurable and degenerative, so I wanted to keep telling her all my secrets before it was too late, before I faded in her mind. I told her about my recurring drowning nightmare, about how I couldn't even submerge my head in bathtub water anymore. I told her how desperately I envied my friends. I complained about driving lessons with my mother and about my annoying sister. She knew every facet of my feelings about Aaron, every sorrow that lingered still. Hello? Her voice sounded tired and I almost regretted calling. Grammy? I kept my voice quiet so my mother wouldn't hear me. It's Paige. Oh, hello, sweet girl, she said, perking up. How are you? Okay. Just making sure I'm all set for school tomorrow. My first day outfit hung on my closet door, ironed and ready since I picked it out last week. Goodness me, a sophomore already, my grandmother mused. Wrong, a junior. This was where her short-term memory hovered around a year ago. It wasn't worth making the correction and confusing her late at night. Growing up so fast. Are you excited about your classes? Yeah, I am. Some subjects bored me, of course, but I'd always felt comfortable with the structure of school, the schedule and syllabi, and a notebook for every class. Hey, Grammy. Yes, honey? I leaned against the edge of my bed, pressing my feet into the carpet. My voice became a whisper. This was not a question I wanted overheard, not by my mother or sister or even the walls of my bedroom. After Gramps died, did anything make you feel better eventually, like happy again? Oh, sweet girl, I know it's so hard. Everything with your friend, but it just happened. You can't expect to feel like yourself right away. Wrong again, it happened 12 and a half months ago, 54 weeks. I know, I just wondered. Well, she said, a bit of intrigue in her voice. I dated a little after your grandfather, you know. You did? Oh, sure. Never found that same magic again, but I didn't expect to. Had enough love for two lifetimes. I could hear her smile. My grandfather died before I was born, so her pain wasn't fresh. She missed my grandfather with fondness now. Dating was nice. Usually. I met new people and I learned a lot about myself. Kissed a few frogs. I laughed, even though a part of me cringed at my grandmother kissing anyone. What else did you do? Well, she said, I traveled. I took that trip to Paris the year I turned 50. You were 50? My grandmother and I had talked about her trip to Paris 100 times. In the hours I spent getting her help with freshman and sophomore French homework. She'd tell me about the patisseries and the people, the museums and landmarks. I had no idea that was only 20 years ago. How old did you think I was, silly? In your 20s, I admitted, and she laughed. On her mantle there was a framed photograph of my grandmother twirling in a full skirt and tan trench coat in front of the Eiffel Tower. Her body and face were blurred, but her hair was brown and to her shoulders. Certainly not, she said. It was my first time traveling without your grandfather. Your mother was in college and I stayed for 6 whole weeks. It was terrifying and liberating. One of my fondest memories. Wow, I said, traveling solo. Like to Manhattan for the screenwriting program. Wow, indeed, she said. I hope it doesn't sound boastful to say that I admire my younger self. That gal had pluck. And you do too, sweet girl. You just have to ask yourself what scares you most about moving forward. My mind flashed with images that the recurring nightmare had imprinted. Underwater thrashing, water in my nose and filling my lungs. Swimming. That's what scared me most. Before I could respond to my grandmother, my mom knocked at my bedroom door, opening it simultaneously. This nettled me every time, knocking while already entering. She didn't actually respect my privacy, but she pretended to with that little knock. "Hey," she said, "who are you talking to?" I covered up the phone speaker. "Tessa." Even if my grandmother heard me through the phone lying to my mother, she wouldn't remember long enough to out me. My mom sighed as she grasped the door handle. "Okay, well, you have to be up early, and you'll see Tessa in the morning, so I don't want you up talking all night." "I won't be," I said, as she pulled the door closed. "Good night." My mother had always been strict, but she reacted to Aaron's death with even more rules, as if by controlling my life she could protect me from harm. She constantly encouraged me to be social, but she enforced a ridiculous curfew. She asked if I wanted to talk, but if I did, she wound up telling me what to do when all I'd wanted was someone to listen. "Hey, Grammy," I said into the phone. "I'm here again, sorry about that."
"No need to apologize. We should both be off to bed."
I sighed. "Yeah, I guess I have a big day ahead of me."
"You have a big life ahead of you, sweet girl. And beginning again gets easier with each step," she said.
My throat ached with repressed tears. After conversations like this, I couldn't believe that she'd eventually forget my name, forget my face. Forget that she once saw me for who I really was. After I hung up, I pulled my planner out of my bag and added the things my grandma did for herself. Date and travel. If only Ryan Chase was single, we could fall in love and go to Paris, two birds with one stone. I could barely bring myself to add the last task. The first four I actually wanted to do on some level. But I had no interest in swimming or even going near water. I was, however, interested in sleeping soundly again someday. So I swallowed hard and wrote it in. 1. Parties/social events. 2. New group. 3. Date. 4. Travel. 5. Swim. There, I thought. A plan. At the top, I wrote, "How to begin again." Chapter 2. By the time Tessa picked me up, I had been ready for half an hour, even after re-ironing my skirt. I hoped the outfit would say, "Hey, Ryan Chase, I'm actually not a creepy bookstore loner. In fact, I have these legs." I checked my schedule no less than 20 times, preoccupied with showing up to the right classes. I went to one wrong class on the first day of 8th grade, and that horrible moment, the sinking realization as the teacher never called my last name, scarred me for life.
"Happy first day of junior year," Tessa said flatly, cranking up the music as she backed out of the driveway.
She wore beat-up jeans and a white linen shirt with colorful embroidery scrawled across the top, possibly from the trip to Mexico with her parents in July. Her hair was still damp at the roots, waves drying in the warm air through the open windows. We pulled into the junior lot, and it hit me. We're halfway done. Some days it felt as if we'd been in high school for our whole lives. Other days, freshman and sophomore year felt like the white lines on the highway, a passing blur along a much bigger journey. This time next year, we'd be seniors. The main high school building, outdated by at least 20 years, loomed in front of us like a behemoth, and I stared at it head on.
"You ready?"
Tessa removed her sunglasses.
I glanced around, sizing up our classmates as they reunited after a whole summer. It was always the same first day information. Who started dating someone new? Who changed their hair color? Whose parents bought them a new car? Not me on any count. I guess. My response was followed by the palm of someone's hand slapping against the window of the passenger's seat. Morgan's grinning face followed.
Hi!
She squealed, giving me a quick hug as we got out of the car. I'd seen Morgan almost every day of summer vacation, but her excitement made it seem like we'd been separated for years by flood and famine. As usual, her red hair was parted with a scientific attention rivaled only by NASA, and tucked behind her ears to reveal pearl earrings.
Kaylee, Morgan said over her shoulder. They're here, get off the phone.
Kaylee, who was leaning on Morgan's car a few feet away, kept typing. I smiled at the sight of her bright pink jeans. She'd been at camp most of the summer and I'd missed her boldness, and not just in her outfits.
Aren't you guys excited?
Morgan asked, clutching my arm. I nodded to appease her, and Tessa shrugged.
It's going to be the most perfect year.
I smiled, almost tempted to make the correction. Perfect is an absolute adjective and can't be modified. Something is or isn't perfect. It can't be more or less perfect.
I know that look.
Morgan narrowed her eyes at me.
Go ahead.
I don't know what you're talking about. I lied.
Yeah, right, grammar girl.
Morgan's head pivoted back around.
Kaylee Renee, come on.
Sorry, Kaylee said, pocketing her phone. She glanced around at us and smiled, her pink lip gloss catching the morning sun. Hi, juniors. We started toward the main building where a red banner hung across the front doors. OHS, another superior year. I wasn't sure why they were trying to sell us since attendance was obligatory. Oakhurst High scored well in state rankings every year, mostly because of its location. Settled in our cushy suburb outside of Indianapolis, the school was full of kids whose parents worked downtown and expected excellence. Even the druggies and slackers made grades decent enough for technical school or junior college.
Another superiorly boring year, Tessa grumbled, hiking up her jeans by the belt loops.
Morgan gave Tessa a sidelong glance. Those jeans look like they're gonna fall off you.
Tessa shot her a dark look.
It is not my fault that they don't make cute jeans in my size.
Kaylee shifted her eyes toward Tessa.
Everyone hates you. You know that, right? You missed me this summer, Tessa said, nudging Kaylee with her elbow.
She grinned back.
I probably would have missed you more if you ever gained a pound from all that junk you eat.
Kaylee had arrived home earlier that week with a shorter haircut and a senior boyfriend named Eric, who lived two towns over. They were together for the last few weeks of camp and they'd even fooled around. I wasn't fully clear on what that meant, details-wise, but Kaylee's face was smug when she told us.
My friends had all had boyfriends before, only a few of whom lasted more than a month or two.
Tessa lost interest in high school guys after her last date at the beginning of the summer. He had apparently listened to techno music in the car and then tried to kiss her in a way that could only be described, according to her, as reptilian. Inside the doors, the familiar smell of school rushed over me. Musty textbooks mingled with the scent of freshly painted walls, and I took a deep breath.
Did you just intentionally inhale the scent of high school?
Kaylee asked, laughing. I shrugged. I know it's not a good smell, but it smells like... possibility.
Possibility has a smell? Morgan asked, teasing me. What else does? Happiness?
Sure, I said, giving her a defiant look. Birthday candle smoke. Movie theater popcorn. A fresh Christmas tree.
Warm pancakes, Tessa added. Chlorine and sunscreen, like the pool.
Those last two things didn't hold any happiness for me these days, but I turned to Morgan and Kaylee.
Exactly.
Well, my locker's upstairs, so I'll see you guys at lunch, Kaylee said as we passed the first staircase.
She turned around and wiggled her eyebrows at me.
I hope you go to the right classes, and no huffing your new school supplies.
Shut up, I muttered, but she just laughed. As we turned down the junior hallway, there they were, all the faces we'd grown up with, the ones that Aaron belonged beside. I received that look from at least 10 people. Their eyes clouded over, faces suddenly marred by sadness and memory. When they saw my face, they also saw his. Tessa and Morgan, to their infinite credit, pretended not to notice.
This is my locker, Morgan said, checking her planner.
The locker combination was written at the top of the page, in handwriting so precise that it made Times New Roman look sloppy.
Stop here for a second.
She twisted the lock around, and Tessa leaned back against the wall, bored already. Tessa's GPA was almost as high as mine, but she never put in more effort than was absolutely necessary. I'd overheard people in our grade call Tessa intense, but she was just calm and thoughtful, detached from the standard drama. Loud laughter echoed against the hallway, and we all looked in its direction. A group of girls surrounded Ryan Chase, who had his head thrown back. I'd been looking at him the same way since sixth grade, smitten, but glancing over casually, embarrassed that my crush would shine right through. That was the year his older sister went through chemotherapy, and I saw them in the grocery store together. I was there with my mom, half reading a book while I followed her around the store. In the cereal aisle, I spotted Ryan, who had recently shaved his head. His sister sat in a wheelchair with a hat on and blankets wrapped around her. The grocery store radio started playing Dancing Queen overhead, and Ryan spun her wheelchair around. I could tell she was smiling even with her mouth hidden by a surgical mask. He danced in front of her wheelchair, unself-conscious and silly, and his sister shimmied a little under the blankets. When their dad noticed, I could tell he was scolding Ryan, but his sister reached up to hold his hand as their dad pushed her forward. His sister went into remission soon after, but I thought of that day often, especially since I'd fully realized how much bravery it takes to create happy moments, even when you don't feel happy.
Ryan Chase, Morgan said. Cuter than ever.
My mom called her boy crazy because Morgan developed a crush on every guy who was reasonably clean and polite. Morgan preferred to think of herself as a romantic, always ready for the possibility of true love. Tessa tilted her head, examining him. He looks like a golden retriever.
What does that mean? Morgan asked.
You know, cute, but generic. Like, you'd see him, or a golden retriever, in a J. Crew catalog, wearing a nice but forgettable sweater. Doesn't he have a girlfriend anyway, Leah something?
Leanne Woods. And no, not anymore, you didn't hear? Morgan asked.
Wait, what?
My head snapped toward her.
They broke up. Morgan said, her voice hushed. On the 4th of July, at the fireworks downtown, apparently it was quite an explosive fight. She took a beat, waiting for us to appreciate her wordplay, but Tessa just rolled her eyes. My pulse beat in my ears. Leanne dumped him for a college guy, Morgan said. After 2 years, she just dropped him like a knockoff purse.
I'm surprised you kept that to yourself for a month, Tessa said, snorting.
Morgan shrugged. I figured you heard. I mean, everyone did.
I so had not. I would have remembered, though Tessa wouldn't have. Gossip turned to white noise before entering her ears. Her brain wasn't even programmed to acknowledge it.
Morgan, on the other hand, had moral limitations that kicked in right after shameless gossip, which she was always thrilled to share.
It's too bad, Morgan said. Ryan is so cute and seems nice. I heard he's been, like, really depressed about it. Apparently, he's barely hung out with anyone but his cousin since it happened.
I couldn't find it in my heart to consider this situation too bad. Ryan Chase was finally single, and we'd bonded yesterday, with the promise of more time together in fourth period honors English. The dating part of my begin-again plan suddenly seemed a lot more appealing.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to him, Tessa said, but I still think he seems conceited and annoying.
This was easy for her to say. Tessa's default mode was unimpressed. She had been so many places and met so many people that nothing particularly fazed her, for better or worse.
Morgan shut her locker. You think everyone is annoying?
Not everyone, not you guys.
Oh, please, Morgan laughed. It totally annoys you when I share information.
Gossip, Tessa said,
and when Paige corrects our grammar.
I glared at Morgan, but Tessa smiled, peeling off toward her own locker.
That, she said, I am used to.
Morgan linked her arm through mine, not noticing my annoyance. She waited until Tessa was out of earshot.
We gotta talk birthday plans for her soon. Her parents are taking us to Barrett House for dinner.
I said, still grumpy.
Oh my God, that's like fancy.
As we made our way down the hall, Morgan glanced over. She bumped her hip into mine.
Oh, don't be mad at me, Grammar Girl. You know we secretly love it.
I'd earned the super creative nickname Grammar Girl from my evil ex-neighbor Chrissy Cohen and the rest of Bus 84. It was the kind of mortifying middle school story that didn't become funny as you grew up. Those two words made me want to sink inside myself. After 3 periods of syllabi explanation, I met up with Morgan to walk to Honors English. Our teacher was new to the district, so she wouldn't know me as the girl who was dating Aaron Rosenthal when he died. I found such relief in that fact, and such guilt in my relief. We arrived in time to claim the perfect seats, far enough away from the teacher that we could pass notes, but not so far that it looked like we tried to sit far away. Ms. Pepper stood out in a sophisticated dress, with dark hair falling to her shoulders. Rectangular glasses perched smartly on her nose, like a superhero's cerebral alter ego. But Ms. Pepper lost my attention as Ryan Chase sauntered in the door, so cute that it felt like slow motion. He passed by me, his red t-shirt drawing my eye to the V-shape of his back, from broad shoulders to slim waist. He sat down next to a tall, dark-haired guy who looked familiar. It took me a moment to place him. Max Watson, Ryan's cousin. So he was back. He went to Oakhurst Public with the rest of us until middle school, when he transferred to the Coventry School. I always figured he switched to private school because he got bullied. He was ganglier then, with the same dark-rimmed glasses and a hand that shot up to answer every question in class. Ryan leaned in to whisper something to Max, who laughed in response. As the bell rang, everyone adjusted forward, diligent little students on the first day. As you all should know, I'm Ms. Pepper, and I'm responsible for your honors English education this year. I like to think that I'm a pretty fun teacher, but my idea of fun includes learning, so take that as you will, she said, picking up a piece of chalk. Comedy that will not be well received is as follows. Sergeant Pepper, anything regarding sneezes, and telling me your name is Mr. Salt. She wrote each word on the board. The whole class chuckled nervously. It was always hard to gauge the teacher's personality on the first day of school. Fortunately, although she kept a straight face, Miss Pepper seemed to realize she was being funny. For those of you who are curious, yes, I did stop after my master's degree because the idea of being Dr. Pepper was unacceptable. She swiped thick lines of chalk through the words she'd written on the board. Sergeant. Sneezes. Salt. Doctor. Is there any other humor you'd like to get out of your systems? The class fell silent. She seemed to be holding back a smirk.
I know it's the first day and no one wants to talk, but speak now or forever hold your peace.
Ryan Chase raised his hand from the front of the classroom.
Excellent, yes, what's your name? She asked.
Ryan Chase, he said.
His voice, steady and deep, sent a shiver down my spine.
And what would you like to contribute?
She asked gamely, poised to add more to the list.
Do you ever make red hot chili?
He asked. I could hear his grin. Laughter twittered across the room.
Absolutely not, Miss Pepper said, smiling before she added red hot chili to the list and crossed it out.
Very nice, Mr. Chase. Anyone else?
Everyone looked around the room, searching the couch cushions of their brains for any possible joke. I almost raised my hand and said, You must hate the daily grind, but I doubted that a ground pepper reference would dazzle any of my classmates.
Okay then, moving on.
She erased the five outlawed phrases.
I have two goals for you this year. The first is for you to learn about literature. The second is for you to learn about one another, so to that point, I have decided to mix up your seating assignments.
I wrinkled my nose. Of course, after Morgan and I got the best seats.
In this bowl, I have all your names. I will draw at random, and that's where you'll sit. Starting with the seat closest to my desk. Morgan Sullivan, she said, reading off the first piece of paper.
Morgan moved to her new desk, displacing a girl I didn't recognize. Three rows later, my current seat was filled by Tyler Roberts, leaving me standing in the back. I waited for my name to be called as most of the classroom filled up. Finally, it was only me and Ryan Chase left standing at the back of the classroom.
Hello again, he said to me.
Hey. My voice sounded breathy, like I hadn't used enough air in my attempt to speak. I hoped it came off more like flirty and less like bronchitis.
Second to last seat by the door will be,
Miss Pepper said, plucking the final papers from the bowl.
Paige Hancock, making the last seat for Red Hot Chili Chase.
I took my seat, feeling the sudden compulsion to smooth the back of my hair. My stomach fidgeted as I situated my things,
clenching with the fear that I would somehow drop all my books or spontaneously fall out of my seat.
"Hey, man,"
Ryan Chase said, high-fiving Tyler Roberts one row across in my old seat.
"Lucky,"
Morgan mouthed, making eye contact from across the room. I stared directly ahead, already tuning out Ms. Pepper in favor of planning how my relationship with Ryan Chase would begin with this seating arrangement.
"Okay, moving right along. As you'll see on the syllabus, the first piece we're studying this year is Hamlet. For those of you who plan to move on to AP English next year, you should know the AP exam is obsessed with the Bard, and therefore we are also obsessed with the Bard, aren't we?" she asked. "Repeat after me, I am obsessed with the Bard."
"I am obsessed with the Bard," everyone mumbled. Only Max Watson's voice rang out. Luckily for him, he was now too tall to be shoved in a locker, but that kind of enthusiastic participation might inspire people to try anyway. "Sonnet 14, Miss Pepper continued, "which was part of your summer reading, culminates with these two lines. Or else of thee this I prognosticate. Thy end is truth's and beauty's doom and date." From behind me, Ryan Chase whispered something to Tyler that I couldn't quite make out.
"Mr. Chase, what does prognosticate mean?"
"It's when," he began seriously, "you prognosticate, but the prognosis on your decision to prognosticate is good."
I laughed along with the rest of the class, and even Ms. Pepper fought a smile.
"I assume that was your approach to the reading assignment. Let's try cousin door number two, Max."
I wondered how she knew their relation to each other. I wouldn't put it past Max to introduce himself before class.
"To prophesize," Max said.
"Correct," Ms. Pepper said, turning to the board. "Now, let's talk briefly about Shakespeare's choice to use truth and beauty. Those two words are tied together in another famous work by which English romantic poet?"
Maggie Brennan raised her hand. So did Max. This kid had no public school survival skills.
"Maggie?"
"Ode on a Grecian Urn," Maggie said. "Keats."
"Indeed. Beauty is truth, and truth beauty."
She wrote on the board, "Truth equals beauty. Beauty equals truth."
"This is one of the great questions of all art, including writing. What makes something beautiful? What makes it truthful? Beauty is subjective. Is truth? Are they really related? I want you to keep these questions in mind, as we'll be returning to them throughout the year. Now," she continued, "back to your summer reading, the sonnet form. How many lines does it contain?"
14,
Ryan Chase called from behind me.
"Same number as the title of the sonnet we were supposed to read, 14.
"Very good," Ms. Pepper said.
Before I could stop myself, I smiled over my shoulder. He winked at me.
"I read it. I was just joking before."
His smile flustered me as I began to script the many meaningful conversations we'd have in this class. Ryan Chase was right. We were going to make it a great year.
Chapter 3. Aaron was camping with his Boy Scout troop when he jumped off a rocky ledge into the river below. He was goofing around, showing off. But the river current picked him up with unexpected force. It wasn't anyone's fault, and no one could have stopped it. Still, I ached for the guys in his troop. They'd carry that day, those images, the panic.